This is an RNZ podcast.
Kia ora koutou katoa and welcome to the Midday Report Essentials podcast with me, Charlotte Cook. Today we get the latest as more details emerge following the deadly shooting in Ponsonby at the weekend. The victim is named and the shooter is found dead at a rural property in Taupō. I asked Tāmaki Makaurau's Deputy Mayor how Aucklanders can feel safe with guns on the street, brawls at bus stations and vicious attacks on the elderly. Desley Simpson says police are stretched trying to keep crime under control in Auckland. And our tamariki will no longer be fueled on couscous and quinoa as free school lunches get a reset. So grab yourself a Sammy and tuck into today's episode. The man sought by police for killing a person on a popular Auckland street has been found dead at a rural property outside Taupō. 31-year-old Hornea K. Selwyn was wanted in connection to a fatal shooting in Ponsonby on Sunday night. Detective Inspector Chris Barry confirmed he was a member of the Killer Bees gang and says his body was found by an associate in Broadlands yesterday.
The investigation team making inquiries in relation to the ongoing investigation were travelling to the Taupō region yesterday afternoon to locate the man sought. On the way, police were notified of a man located deceased at a rural address in the Broadlands area. The death is currently being treated as unexplained, while a post-mortem examination is yet to be completed. It is believed the deceased is the man sought by police in relation to the homicide investigation. The wider police investigation into the homicide remains ongoing. Our investigation team will continue to piece together the information received to date.
Police say they are not currently seeking anyone else in relation to the shooting, and a motivation for it is not yet clear. 33-year-old man Robert Sidney Horn has been named as the victim killed at the scene on Sunday night. Detective Inspector Chris Barry says the victim's family have been told now about the shooter's death. In a social media post, Robert Horn's whānau said it was with deep sadness they announced the tragic and sudden passing of a son, brother, moko, uncle and friend to many. They say his body has now been released from the coroner and is en route to Parawira Marae, where he will lay until Thursday before travelling to Naitu Potoki Kimotu Karaka Marae for burial. Detective Inspector Chris Barry says the police are continuing to investigate the deaths on behalf of the coroner.
We'd like to thank the public for the information received to date regarding the identity of the man we have been seeking. We know the public will still have a number of questions and you will appreciate there are some aspects that I will not be able to comment on this morning. So to the best of our knowledge, he has travelled from Auckland to Taupō. We can't comment on how he got there. At this early stage, the deceased remains at the property and I'm not able to make any comment on any injuries other than to say at this stage we are treating it as unexplained.
Detective Inspector Chris Barry says it's too early in their investigation for specifics, but it's likely Hornea K. Selwyn died at some point yesterday. He says the firearm used in the Ponsonby shooting has not yet been located. While the police confirmed that the shooter had connections to the Killer Bees gang, they said that the victim, Robert Horn, and his associates had no known connection to any criminal group. Detective Chris Barry also says there is no known relationship between the shooter and the victim. Auckland's Deputy Mayor, Desley Simpson. Tēnā koe, Desley. What do you make of the updates in the last 24 hours just this morning, finding out that the shooter has been found dead?
Tēnā koe, Charlotte. I think first, like, absolutely sincere condolences to Robert Horn and his family in whānau. It appears that the victim was entirely unrelated to the shooter and the killing was random and an act of senseless violence. And that must be concerning for every Aucklander, certainly those who reside within the Ponsonby area. Look, crime in Auckland is becoming more and more of a concern, especially violent crime. And we've had recent attacks on students at transport hubs, and now we've got this. I think it's important for me just to set some sort of safety framework clarity, and that is, first, that the police have the primary role of dealing with crime, antisocial behaviour, the roles of gangs, etc. But they are stretched, and it means that they can't be everywhere, and it does leave a bit of a gap. I think from council perspective, we are trying to do what we can within our remit, and talking to the police a lot. And what we're putting in place is, and I think it came out in April, is that we are looking at our town centres and transport hubs with additional resources for things like our Māori and Pacific wardens to do some patrolling. But look, at the end of the day, it's hard to police against the kind of random and senseless act we've seen in the last few days. It's hard to fathom, and again, my sympathies go out to the family and friends.
Mm. I mean, you acknowledge that police are stretched at the moment. So without that more extensive cover from them, can Aucklanders feel safe?
Look, we're doing everything we can from our end to support the police. We do talk to police on a regular basis. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't almost police the random senseless acts of violence sometimes like this. But I would like to think that Auckland is a safe city. I think it's important for people to have confidence that they can get out and about. I mean, poor old Ponsonby, they're right in the middle of their Ponsonby Bar and Restaurant Festival in the month of May. And I just hope people will continue to get out and support Ponsonby and all our town centres, and not let something like this overshadow the fact that we want Auckland to thrive and do well and for people to keep safe within our city.
How much of an impact would you say that crime is actually having on everyday Aucklanders? Are they changing their behaviours?
I'd like to think that they weren't. I'd like to think that we're putting enough up to ensure that, you know, we're trying to do all we can to put the fence at the top of the cliff. But at the end of the day, the solution is a combination of police, our work, and for people themselves to be aware of their own environs and safety.
It's not just really limited to gang crime, as you mentioned. Young teenagers are attacking each other at bus stations, and RNZ this morning revealed a video of an 88-year-old lady who was viciously knocked to the ground in an unprovoked attack, also on Sunday in broad daylight. I mean, these kind of events are seemingly happening more and more frequently and not always being reported on.
That example that you've mentioned was tragically sad and absolutely unacceptable. And we are talking to Auckland Transport about more safety officers, you know, that they're putting on board as well. At the end of the day, I think it's important for Aucklanders to gather together and just call out this kind of crime. It is unacceptable in our city. We need to be able to work, move around our city and recreate in a safe environment. And we cannot let the small amount of negativity and bad behaviour overshadow the lives of well-meaning and law-abiding Aucklanders going about their business.
Tēnā koe, thank you very much. That is Auckland's Deputy Mayor, Desley Simpson. All primary students receiving school lunches will keep getting them, as is for the next 2.5 years, but older pupils will shift to a more basic program from next year. The new look scheme announced today will save the government more than $100 million a year, with $4 million of that going to a new scheme for preschoolers. Our Deputy Political Editor Craig McCulloch joins us now. Kia ora. What does this mean for kids getting school lunches now?
first things first, nothing changes for anyone this year. So that's no changes there. For primary students, actually nothing changes at all until the end of 2026 at the earliest. The changes that are kicking in, they affect students who are year 7 and above. So we're talking intermediate and secondary, and that kicks into effect from next year. Basically, it means the hot lunches, the locally supplied, those in-house meals, they are gone. At the moment, schools are providing those lunches through a whole mix of models, some from the Education Ministry, some from local suppliers, about 150 of them across the country. So instead, the government is going to move to a more centralised system. It is going to bulk buy a whole bunch of food, and then intermediate and secondary schools will order lunches from that central source. The schools then will store, prepare, distribute those lunches. Now, in terms of what the lunches will actually look like, David Seymour says, yes, they will still be nutritious, yes, they will be tasty, but think sandwiches and fruit here, not couscous and quinoa. Those are his words. Now, it's not clear exactly how many children are even getting couscous and quinoa at the moment, how common that is, but I think we're looking at a shift to packed lunches and the like.
Okay, so how is this move going to save the $100 million?
Yes, I've dug into the numbers a little bit. The last government set aside about $320 million to fund free lunches through to the end of this year, but no more. Now, the government says the Education Ministry is estimating a blowout this year of about another $20 million due to increases in food costs and the school population. So this year, the scheme is looking like it will cost about $340 million. The coalition is talking about $480 million over 2 years, so roughly $240 million a year. That's how we get to the figure of about $100 million cheaper. That's the maths. In terms of how the savings are being made, the bulk buy approach, David Seymour says that means cost savings, presumably to some of the types of food being purchased will be cheaper.
Okay, and there's been a lot of chat about school lunches. Been going on for a while. So has there been any reaction to this announcement?
Yes, the reaction has actually been largely positive. It suggests, I think, that the government has landed in the right spot here. Labour has come out and labelled it a backtrack, saying that David Seymour hasn't got the big sweeping cuts that he wanted. They have criticised the shift in approach for secondary schools, saying that maybe it will increase food waste. But overall, I think a very measured response from Labour. Labour actually calling this a win for Kiwi kids. And the Secondary Teachers Union, not necessarily a fan of the National Party or ACT, it's come out, it's also positive. Yes, they've got a few concerns, but again, overall, they have welcomed its continuation. They are pleasantly surprised, I think, with where the coalition has landed.
Thank you very much. That's our Deputy Political Editor, Craig McCulloch. Debt solution provider is warning that cutting funding for advisers could worsen the mental health of those struggling financially. The Ministry of Social Development confirmed its building financial services funding is decreasing from $22.3 million to $19.5 million after a pandemic cash boost expired. That change means fewer financial mentoring organisations will receive contracts. It also says contracts for the country's four providers that help those struggling to pay off their loans won't be extended. Christine Liggins is the Chief Executive of Budget Advice Provider DebtFix, and she's with me now. Kia ora, just how necessary are these free budget and debt advice services?
Kia ora, yeah, I'm Christine from DebtFix. Look, very imperative, especially at this time that we're all going through this financial crisis. Our numbers in the sector are increasing, and to cut this funding, we understand that it was COVID funding, but we're actually in a much worse position now as a nation and financial hardship than we were in COVID. So it's quite critical that these services are still available and funded.
Just how much financial trouble are the people that are coming to use your services in?
Look, when we look at the budgets are in strife because of cost of living increases, rent increases, petrol increases and mortgage rate rises. So it's nothing that they've particularly done themselves. So it's not their, you know, particular fault. And how do we help them get out of it when a lot of services have been cut? You know, there's a lot of budget services who will have no funding come 1st of July, and a lot of others who have had it cut. So not sure what the landscape's going to look like. But, you know, I feel for our communities, where are they going to go for help?
Yeah, so, I mean, what can they do if debt advisors are dealing with clients who actually can't afford the services and they really need it to get through?
So all budget services are a free service. The Debt Solutions, which is where I sit, is also a free service. But if our funding gets cut, that means, you know, do we have to cut staff? Do we have to cut services? The wait list becomes longer for the people who need the help. And where can they go for help? Where can they go for good advice about the situation, you know, for a trained help?
Tēnā koe, Christine Luggins, that's Chief Executive of Budget Advice Provider Debt Fix. Tēnā koe, and thanks for listening to today's episode. Keep an eye out for Apopo, tomorrow's episode, wherever you get your podcasts from.